Okay, look at that. The NBA season's over, David, but there's still a lot to worry about.
Yeah, my synergy account is so hot.
Yeah. Okay. So this is bringing in troops. Little started a Zoom from quarantine show. Now it's Zoom, not from quarantine show. And David, we had it in person. I'm sorry you couldn't make it on Friday. Gerard, Judy, Adina. And then after the show, we sat by the pool. Judy made an Aperol Spritz, which is, she calls it a sport drink. It actually is not a sport drink. It's not like Gatorade. You're not going to run faster after you drink it. But Gerard's a swimmer. He did some swimming. It's great. Just hanging out for a bit, laughing, telling stories. It's really what we haven't done very much of lately, and I'm very thankful for it. And great people. This show has great people. I love you guys. So I'm sorry you couldn't make it. Next time, we'll do it with everybody.
You know Dana Carvey is, right? The comedian.
Sure.
Back when his kids were teenagers, he has a great routine where everything he says to them, all they ever respond, he had two boys. That's a bunch of fucking bullshit. That's how I felt the entire time you guys were partying. Bunch of fucking bullshit. I felt like Dana Carvey's long since grown teenagers. Yeah. I'm happy. Correct. I'm happy you guys had fun.
Randy was handled it even worse.
Great. I'd be disappointed if it was anything different.
Every text, he had a bunch of questions. I answered all of his questions. Every text got the thumbs down, thumbs down, thumbs down, thumbs down.
Now you sound like my dad. That's a whole other story. Jay Thomas famous for his thumbs down.
Here's a little, we have so many thoughts about Team USA. This show cannot contain them. Let's start with just in the last couple of weeks. This is a quote from the head coach of Spain after the U.S. beat them in a warm-up game in Las Vegas. And he said, listen, that gold medal is already booked. If Team USA can play according to their potential, or even a little bit lower, then there's nobody in the world who can beat them in a real game when they'll be playing for something real, like winning a medal. So let's be realistic and try not to fool people and not to sell something which we don't have. And now it's like 20 minutes later and we just lost to France. Was he wrong? What's the deal? I know we got a lot to explore here, but like...
Who was on that team? Because that team didn't play in Tokyo. Bradley Beal was on that team, right?
Bradley Beal, well, okay, yeah, we can get into that. Mm-hmm. Bradley Beal is the only notable difference, though.
And there's only five guys that can play at any one time, right? So I completely agree with that, coach. Not that it was booked. I don't agree with that. I think that's what you'd say if you're the other team. I get why he said that, right? But if Bradley Beal's on this Team USA, I think they were prohibitive favorites. Well, even more prohibitive favorites than they were before yesterday's loss against France. He's one of the best guards in the world. And I think for Pop, he's a two-way player. He wasn't for the Wizards. He hasn't played defense in a couple of years, but he's a very physical, long, athletic guard that really knows how to play and can really score. And so when you think about what Pop has kind of built, we don't have any of those guys. Chris Middleton might be our best guy, and he's exhausted, which we went through. So Beal would be our best two-way player unless Durant decides to play both ways. Then we have two of them. That's it.
So people want to blame somebody, and they want to blame on Twitter, Greg Popovich. and maybe there's some of that. We're open-minded on that, but they're really teeing off on him now. Coach Krzyzewski coached this team for, I want to say, 10 years. Is that right? Maybe I'm off.
Long time.
They basically got a lot worse when he left. They didn't win the World Cup a couple of years ago, and now they've lost 3 out of 5 in this opening game. And there was a little report of players grumbling about running the San Antonio offense. And this caused me to spark something in me. I just want to go back for a second to 1972, which is Jack McMullen with this incredible story about Greg Popovich as a player, as a power forward who wanted to make this team, the USA Olympic team. He was in the military. He had been touring as a basketball player after playing at Air Force and touring Europe, representing this military select team. And he was like a house of fire, determined to make this team. I'm going to read some quotes from Jackie's story from a couple years ago. He was battling with all these big name college players. It was an uphill battle. I didn't think of it at the time, but looking back, it gave him real motivation to be something in this game. There's a reason he's attracted to hungry players who don't have big names. Jackie asked him about, and the story is, Popovich was one of the best players in camp. There was a lot of politics, a lot of big names, and he didn't make the team. And according to Popovich, talking to Jackie McMullen, I have never talked about that. They picked the right guys for the Olympics. That's all I've ever said. Now, according to R.C. Buford, whose house Popovich lived in, one of his closest friends to this day, it was a kick in the gut. He's never forgotten about it. So now they're in this, like, maybe Greg Popovich's whole career is avenging this. Right? Maybe that's why he became an NBA head coach. Maybe it's why he was so motivated in this sport. There were other stories about him almost accepting a position to work in defense intelligence overseas. At the last minute, he took a basketball job. So now we're in this moment where you have a million brilliant observations, but one of them is he started Bam Adebayo and Draymond Green, two good defensive mobile players who I would say are a little bit in the mold of Greg Popovich in 1972. And that was perfectly terrible against Rudy Gobert. You want to talk about this?
Yes. It's very apparent to me that the roster construct of the team is defense first. So from a team perspective, we've got Dame, we've got Zach LaVine, purely offensive players, right? But it is a very defensive focused team in terms of roster and the way we play. And I think we're taking the approach that the Milwaukee Bucks took defensively against Phoenix, which is really extend our defense, take away teams' three-point shots, and then flood the paint with helpers and recovery out. It's a shorter court, remember. So the line's closer in. And so we're going to be able to really lock up people in the paint, force turnovers with our length and quickness and speed, and then be able to contest at three, contest at the rim, or not really. We have one rim contester, Bam Adebayo, and he's not amazing yet. He's good. But we've got length and force guys to miss shots, whatever.
You see Caleb's point.
Yeah, so.
Chris and,
but you're not going to blow teams out if you're defensive focus at the level of France, right? You're dealing with NBA players and, sort of starting point guard Nando DiColo is a former NBA player who's one of the best players in the world. He just plays in Europe. He's a great, great player. So you're just not going to turn them over 25 times a game. In fact, I think we had them at 13 turnovers and we had 12. So that's not a big difference. That's one possession, right? It's going to work against weaker ball handling teams for sure. The problem is offensively, I think he's thinking, all right, I don't know what choice he had to take. We can talk about that. Bam and Draymond are interesting in that they can really guard. And they, by the way, amazing. Draymond was unbelievable defensively in this game, I thought. So was Jrue Holiday. He was our best player probably. But they can pass. So he's got sprinkled in LaVine, who I'm not a fan of still, Durant, who I am, Lillard, right? He's got other guys that can score, and he's got other guys that can pass the ball and also guard big people. The problem is Rudy Gobert could not help their Utah team, who was dealing with a Mitchell injury and a Conley injury that came back later on. They lost the Clippers because the Clippers went small and forced Rudy, who I thought did a great job guarding the perimeter, but not the same. It wasn't the same Jazz team. And we couldn't do that because we have real centers who can't score outside the paint. They can pass outside the paint and screen outside the paint, but ultimately they can't score.
They can't get Rudy out of the paint.
Right. And Rudy can stay home and bother people, as can France. France made a big decision during the game. If you want to talk about being critical of Pop, we need to talk about roster construction for sure. But in the game itself, which I watched live, I only missed the first pass, the first attempt we took. We locked them up. We couldn't score early on, but they couldn't either. And France looked lost offensively. And when we switched every screen, which is what we did, France started realizing, let's just continue to force the switch we want and attack the matchup we want. And I thought it gave them an offensive focus. And the offensive focus was pound those motherfuckers in the paint. And to use the metaphor I did with the Bucks, it was the way Milwaukee played offensively, was just pound the paint, pound the paint, pound the paint against Phoenix. And I thought it gave France direction offensively. And it really worked. And when they went ultra big with three big guys, We're little, and Durant plays little. He's not a great rebounder. He's very thin. Relatively, I don't think he was all into the game. He didn't play very well. They're the biggest, strongest team we'd play. So it was the worst matchup for us playing this way. And as I said to you on the phone, they got a little bit lucky. They only made 8 threes, I think, in the game. Maybe I'm wrong. I think they made 8 or 10, but 3 or 4 were incredibly lucky threes. We played incredible defense on or off of offensive rebounds, which is not really defensive breakdown. It's just got a little lucky. And Damian Lillard sucked. Like, when are we going to win games when Damian and Kevin Durant? Lillard wasn't just okay. He was 3 of 10 from the field, but he had a third of our turnovers. He had 4 turnovers out of 12. Yeah. And they were weak-ass turnovers. And like the last couple of minutes of the game, that was bad. Like, I think he'll be much better. And I know he talked about the Spurs way. I know exactly what he's talking about, Henry. With less than a minute to go in the game, he gets the ball above the break, and he's wide open. Like, what have you ever seen Damian Lillard not shoot that ball wide open from three? He made the extra pass, and Nicolo intercepted it. And he never should have made that pass. That's not Pop's fault. That's Dame's fault. I told you, I think Dame was nervous. I think our guys that we only have, how many guys have experience? Draymond, Durant, who else has played in these games before? Durant, Green, who else has played in these events? Olive hasn't played for Team USA.
Seems a lot like a quiz, David. It seems a lot.
Middleton, sorry. Middleton did. I remember the World Championships. He was there.
Yeah.
But Dame just looked, and I know when you're playing for your country, it's not the same as when you're playing in the NBA. It just isn't. There's no money involved. I thought we looked really nervous. Dame especially looked very nervous, I thought.
I felt a little bit too, like, it's kind of like being like new on campus. Like, you know, maybe you're perfectly comfortable with, like, you know, the classes they're going to teach you or whatever, but that until you really know where the bathroom is, like, you know, you're not quite feeling like that kind of moxie and different refs, you know, different configuration of the court, different rules. Like, it's a little hard to be swashbuckling. And like, if you might be breaking a rule that you don't even know exists, like, you have to act a little more timid. You just do. You have to like be a little more wary. Right. And, yeah, I don't think we'll see Dame. Okay, maybe this is good. Right? Actually, let me back up. U.S. Women's National Soccer Team lost to Sweden 3-0. Very similar thing. Simone Biles opened with amazing, but, you know, not great for her performance. I feel all these things are a little bit related, where I think we're in Coach Pop's story of why he didn't make the team in 1972. It was sort of light corruption. Right? There were like bigger forces at play. There were meetings that he wasn't invited to. Doug Collins is one of the people. Doug Collins like got a call. This is all in Jackie's story. They're like, hey, you're not going to make this team unless you can get somebody to represent you in the back room. And so he called in a college coach to go fight for him. And that's the only reason he made the team. Like, this is not people selecting the best players, right? And Simone Biles worked in an environment with Larry Nassar. And USA Gymnastics is terrible, right? The organization is very broken. The U.S. women's soccer players have, I think I'm saying, driven more revenue but gotten less money than the men, right? Like, they're fighting their own organization, which has its own real structural problems, right? We're not immune to that in basketball. I feel like we're a little bit, it doesn't feel quite the same probably as Luka pulling on the Slovenia jersey as like, let's just show everybody, right? Like, post-Trump, I think we're a little more like, we got to clean up our own house a little bit. We've been a little corrupt, right? We've been a little... I think it feels a little creepier, and I feel like that's part of this, right? It's that we're not necessarily all feeling great about the organization of it.
I think I agree with everything you said, but I would add one more thing. As we talked about before, and we haven't lost an Olympic game in a long time. You know, we are such that top of that perch that it's just hard to be as motivated. But you started this by saying could be good. I agree.
Yeah.
I think if I would, I don't bet, but if I did, I would bet on Team USA's women's soccer team. I may be wrong. I know I'll be rooting hard for them. In fact, they're my favorite team in the whole tournament. I haven't watched very much of anything right now, but I will be watching them. And they lost 3-0. It wasn't 1-0. It was, they got blitzed. And to be clear, according to basically US soccer, the women don't get paid as much as men because they're women. Like, they're not even hiding it, right? They're not even arguing there's a revenue discrepancy. But of course they aren't, because if the women are make two times as much as the men, well, then you got to pay them twice as much. That fucking ain't happening. So they're not even mentioning revenue. It's just, this is women. This is how crazy that world is. So yeah, I get it, right? But they'll rally up, just like Team USA has rallied up before. These problems happened before Trump too, right? As black men in America and exploitation, whatever else. But they have pride. When Damian talked about we got to play like the world's best players. Yeah, they have a lot of pride in that. So I think you'll see some of that swagger. I watched the games and I watched a lot of them just now. Again, I watched it again on Synergy. First play of the game, we run a beautiful pick and roll for Adebayo, who blows a left-hand layup, and Durant, Gobert didn't even try to block it. He just blew it. And Damian, we run a beautiful staggered screen for Damian for three. Now, I don't think Portland does a lot of that, but the end result is wide open Damian Lillard from a closer three-point line. He missed it 16 inches left. Like, when does he do that? So, yeah, we were nervous. He had a turnover late in the game, too, where he was being blipped. Now, DeColo is a tall guard. Damian's short. But my son in sixth grade got yelled at by his dad when he tried to throw over his head against taller guys. You throw over your head against smaller guys. Well, Lillard knows this. He's been small his whole life. In this sport, he's always been a little guy. He just didn't execute. So I think we'll see some improvement. I also think we'll eventually get just some adjustment on the court. I think we'll get Durant playing more center. He's done it before. That defensively gives up something, but offensively gives you a lot more. We have five guys that can play. Middleton barely played. He does have Olympic experience. My guess is, you know better than me exactly, but I guess they flew in the night before him, Booker and Drew.
Yeah, they got there like 22 hours before the game started.
They must have been quarantined somewhere else first when they first came from America.
Yeah.
Yeah. So where were they quarantined?
I don't know if that they did quarantine, but they flew from Seattle to Tokyo.
Once you get to Tokyo, you do have to sit. I think you do have to be quarantined for a couple of days. Although they might be an exception because they were being tested every day in the America too.
Exception. Yeah.
So that's never ideal. Ideal when you fly in three important players right before you play. It's good news that Drew was phenomenal. We know from experience, though, we're not going to necessarily see that every single day from Drew offensively, but it's good to see he had that energy. So let's hope Booker plays better. He wasn't very good. Middleton barely. He may be on my machine. If Durant's at five, you probably need to have Middleton at four, just for defensive purposes and shooter. And then you can go Drew and Dame, and you got to pick a fifth guy. I don't love Zach LaVine there. Tatum. Tatum. Oh, yeah, I would go Tatum. Just think about two-way players that can also score and defend. So, but I think the matchup with France was bad too, because no, according to what experts are saying, it wasn't me. I'm repeating it. They're the biggest, most physical team in this tournament, and that's going to be our Achilles heel. We'll handle anything else, but you can beat us up physically right now. And so if we play France again, my guess is we would start trying to play our faster guys and make them try to match up with us better. And I think we'd fight harder too. I don't think we fought very hard.
There's a little bit of a when you have a surplus, you can have some loss and nobody cares. The U.S. women's national soccer team has been so good that maybe they didn't pick the roster that they thought was the absolute best, right? And I did notice there's a pretty good profile of their coach I read last weekend. And they were saying, first, on the one hand, it's a very easy team to coach because they love being coached. They win all the time. They work like crazy. They're the best players in the world. What a dream for a coach. But they were saying there's one part of the job, which is unbelievably hard, which is, there are 100 viable candidates and you have to pick, which is a very difficult job. And I guess in soccer, that falls more to him than in basketball. But I thought, and then they ended up with not a single forward under the age of 30. Alarm bells went off for me on that. Where I'm like, there's no fucking way you pick the best players in the world then, right? Like every time you have a sports team that just continues to dominate, it's because they keep trotting out another 18, 19, 20, 21 year old, right? This is how it goes. This is the only way it goes. Because hormones matter, right? Being young is a huge thing in sports. And I struggle, I'm like, oh, so those are the famous players. Those are the money-making players. Those are the sneaker company players. Those, like, this is a sign that, like, the same forces that kicked Greg Popovich off Team USA in 1972 are keeping some young, hungry player off the U.S. national team in 2021, right? Like, same forces, like, money. These are the forces. And it struck me a little bit I don't know exactly how this team was built. I know there are a lot of forces beyond Greg Popovich and Jerry Colangelo. One person said to me that, like, the NBA as an entire business is a little boat that floats on the ocean of Nike, right? There are big forces here, but the idea that you can have a meeting and say, hey, we really want player X or player Y out there because it's going to help our marketing in Asia, which is a big concern, right? And then the medals just follow, like, is true if you're really better than the rest of the world. It's not true if you're a little bit better, right? Because on a given night, you could lose to the big, huge France team.
Right. I don't know. I know this. In soccer and basketball, the world's best players aren't 18 to 21, almost without doubt. How old is Luka? He's an exception. How old he is?
22.
22. So he at 21, he probably deserved it too.
Well, he didn't just join the team too, right? Like, no, but this is not Luka's first time in a national team jersey. Like, you got to keep bringing in the next Lukas, right? Like, this needs to be his third year playing on the team, which is probably what it is. And that's when you fucking dominate, right? Like,
Right. Half our team makes sense to me. Draymond, I love Draymond Green. It doesn't make sense to play Draymond when you don't have fives that shoot. Play Draymond fine next to Brooke Lopez, right? But there's lots of discussion, Henry, about is this an inherent problem with American basketball? No. Let's be clear. First of all, I'm a huge international fan. We export our game. I'm thrilled about it. We've talked about it before. When you look at the draft each year, almost everyone getting in the lottery, just out of it, are Americans. I've studied the draft for the first time. The best European player is a very slow Turkish guy, very talented, but probably not Jokic talented, and just as slow, that's a problem. He's going to be a nice player maybe. And then a really slow 6'8 Australian who plays like Joe Ingles but can't shoot. Joe Ingles was the top three shooter in the world this year. So that's it. Those are the two best international players in like the top 15. This is how it normally is in most, not all drafts, but most drafts. But to go back to something you said, which I think you're so right, I don't think a lot of these players want to be on Team USA desperately in this generation. I give Kevin Durant credit for whatever terrible things America's done for him. He's also become a very wealthy man many times over, on the court and off the court. And he loves, this guy, I don't think he played his best, but he competed. Not the highest level I can see, but what is he competing for? He's done this. How many gold medals does he have? He clearly loves the ball. I thought about this in the exhibition games where he dominated one of them. I think it dominated against Argentina. Like, what are you doing, KD? Like, it's time to go somewhere else. Jason Tatum needs that time. To your point on Luka, third year, we need to develop Tatum. If you can play Bam, fine, but you got to get a stretch four next to him because he's just not a threat outside of, four or five feet. So, depending on, we knew 2 weeks ago that Booker and Drew and Middleton were going to be busy. So why didn't we have better talents than, nothing against Kelvin Johnson. I like him as a player, but I don't know if he's ever going to be a long-term starter in the league. And he played, Jeremy Grant didn't play. Now, I don't know why Jeremy Grant didn't play. Oh, he had been in health and safety protocols, Henry. That's why he didn't play. He had been out, same as Beal, but Beal was kicked off. I think Grant was just exposed, but never tested positive. So maybe he'll play going forward. He's better than Johnson for sure. On both ends, he's better. So that'll help. Yeah, that'll be a nice addition, adding him. I think we're a little bit lazy in who we grab. I think you're exactly right in who's picking the team, which is a little unfortunate to hear that. We don't have those kind of margins. There's enough talent out there that we better bring, nothing against Coach K. And I believe, I was on a show once with Stephen A. Smith, my mom hates him from now on because of this. And I argued for a college coach to be the next Team USA coach because I argued they're not stale. They don't coach nearly as many games as the pro guys do. And they get being inspirational better. They just get it. In a short period of time, there's more rah-rah. Coach K, I think, is the best of all time for American sports at getting guys to absolutely want to go through a wall, you know, so to speak. NBA coaches have to be a little more savvy, right? They just so many games, there's so many timeouts. You just can't go to that all the time yelling and screaming or inspiring. And I think we should, and Stephen A. disagreed. He thought we should hire Pop or an NBA coach. I had suggested Billy Donovan back when he was still a college coach. I thought he was the more obvious choice. Now I wouldn't pick him. I'd pick a college guy. And so I think that we're a little bit stale, but I also think we're going to rally. Yeah, it doesn't mean we'll win. These other teams are good, but like we play Iran next, we might beat their ass.
We probably will. And I think it's like Popovich is old now, which I say with the utmost respect. Like he, you know, I don't know if this is true, but like people in the know say that he hasn't watched film in like a decade. Like he kind of knows what he knows. He's not like when you were texting them all the game, they weren't adjusting to France's paint attack. Like he's not like that guy, you know? I'm not even kidding. Like Baxter's story about Pop's wine dinners. Like if you just put in the time and money that Pop's dedicating to throwing the nicest dinner parties in the history of planet Earth, all over the planet, every city, he knows the chefs. He knows the sommeliers, right? Like this man is putting in like $1 million a year in some estimates to this career of his, where he's like the best restaurant consumer on planet Earth. And he has giant dinners. And I think you can make a case that it actually helps him bond with Tony Parker and with Tim Duncan. And that pays off over a decade, right? Where they really bond. I don't know if this schedule works for that. I don't know if 2 weeks in Vegas with younger players than Tony Parker and Tim Duncan, right? Who might not even want to go to that dinner. Like, and you don't have those hours. I don't know that you get to bond the way that Pop knows how to bond, right? Like on this team, to your point, I think like Coach K can get maybe a lower level of bonding in 4 minutes of post-game speech, right? Like, whereas Coach Popovich is like, no, this isn't what we're doing. Like, get in the car. Like, we're going to bond at Lebec Fan, right? And they're like, no, like, we're not doing that. We're not going out to dinner with you, Coach.
So, a couple of things. On Coach K's side, he also has the benefit of recruiting all those guys.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he recruited everyone. And to be fair, I was saying this before at Coach K, I'm sorry, Henry, you might have been able to win at least one gold medal when they had Kobe and LeBron and Carmelo and Wade. And the world wasn't quite where it is now, to be fair. Nothing against your knowledge or lack thereof, but with the assistant coaches that he had, Pop, Nate McMillan, whoever, I know the other ones, I've forgotten. Like, come on, those guys, like, other than Carmelo, Wade competes. Carmelo is fine. He's good. Obviously, he's a good player and a great scorer. He still is the leading scorer all the time for Team USA. Durant's about to pass him. Next game, Durant will pass him. But Kobe, what do we have on this team? Durant. When you think of the most iconic names of the eras, those four guys were on the list. Three of them were in the same draft, right? Wade, LeBron, and Melo, right? Kobe was their king in a sense. So there's four dudes. Wade was so unselfish, Henry, that he elected to come off the bench. And that's what I said to you that year, man, LeBron's going to play with Wade in Miami in January of that year, because I had just seen what Wade did. And I thought LeBron wanted to play with someone like that. I didn't realize how close they were as friends. It was just a gut feeling I had. But it's easier when you have Kobe and LeBron and Bosch. I think Bosch was on the team too.
Like, that's why they all went together. Yeah, this is.
Yeah, right, exactly. You're right. Bosch too.
2008, 2009, 2010. They're all on Team USA together with Nick Arison.
Yeah,
Nick Arison was one of the Team USA officials, like
from the Heat. From the Heat, right? So all there is now is KD. Dame's got all the credibility in the world, but he's not been in any of these events before that I can remember. It's a little bit flawed. I would argue that. I think you're exactly right. I think Coach K is better in those short moments than Pop. I think I, and speaking as a soon to be 57 year old, I'm not excited about being in my 70s. I want to make it, but I don't want to be running a team. I know my mind won't be what it used to be. However, I do think the culture Pop can normally deliver is valuable over a 10-day stretch. They've been together for a while, in part because these guys were elsewhere, right? But with COVID, I'm not sure they're allowed to, like, I don't know where they're living in Japan. Do we know yet where they're living? Are they used to rent boats, right? Live on a cruise ship.
They did
agree. They can't be living in the dorms. Are they doing that again?
That was, I don't know. That was only Greece. That was William Wesley. William Wesley got Team US, got Nike, got William Wesley to put together Team USA. And that's when they started winning, right? That was like, and they got the boat and Rio too. There you go. I stand for it. Luka just got to take every shot, as Devin's pointing out.
Who they beat, by the way?
But they beat one quick after another today. Like,
I'm talking about the single game scoring record. Someone knows. I'm not asking you. Someone knows who did Luka beat? I'm not saying Slovenia beat him. Luka beat him.
Okay, here's my question though. Like, me coaching Dame and KD, right? Like, just saying, go play like the Blazers did, frankly. That's what we're saying. Don't play too much D. Take turns playing hero ball, right? Like, would that have been better for one game against France?
I'm so glad you asked that question. I would argue, it's just an argument, definitely not. I don't think that anything they're doing meant they were going to miss more shots. I really don't. And I've been watching them twice now. All right, Argentina. So thank you, Caleb. This is the worst Argentina team. Like, we just, Team USA just blew them out the other day in Vegas, right? Without some of our guys. So nothing against Luka scoring 48. He's incredible. He won't score 48 against Team USA, I don't think. So no, I think tactics. I think that they're going to guard us closely. I think that they're going to try to, I think your point on film is the best point to make of all. You can't just mail it in anymore. Now, if Steve Kerr is watching film, Jay Wright, those guys are not lazy and they're not old. Jay Wright is amazing, amazing coach. Steve Kerr is pretty fucking amazing, I think, too. I think that they're doing all that. Pop ain't, but I think it makes him a little bit less likely to change when they say, coach, we got to do something different because they've seen the film. I don't love that. Like, that's a flaw at the top of Team USA, right? How do you pick a guy? Is it a lifetime service award, right? It sounds like it is.
Well, he was supposed to be the coach when Coach K got the job, but then the same politics that kept him out as a player in 72 kept him out as a coach. So now they got him after the point, right? Like, another part of that story is he's working out with the ropes, the battle ropes and the sprinting, all that stuff, just because Coach Pop has this idea that, like, Kevin Durant and company will listen to him if he's, like, super fit. It's like, oh, this is so grasping at straws, right?
Watching the game, I really focused on Durant because I happen to think he's a very coachable guy for someone as incredibly talented, some of the best players of all time, one of the best guys. He gave good eye contact to the coaches, not necessarily Pop. I don't think it was that. I think there's a failure at the top. I don't think Pop should be the head coach.
My point is about Pop. This is Pop 3 summers ago doing work with battle ropes.
Yeah, now he's just running sprints.
He's not watching film. He is doing battle ropes. Like, fucking weird. That's fucking weird.
Yeah, the battle rope thing. He is running sprints with them. That was first day of camp. He was running the whole staff.
Yeah.
All of them.
Because he trained for 3 years for that to, like, blow everybody's mind. Like, what a waste of time.
And it doesn't, right? It doesn't blow anyone's mind, right? Ted Lasso did it. Ted Lasso ran with his team around the court and fields, you remember.
So fictional.
It's funny. It's funny one time. The players don't give a fuck, really. What they want you is to put them in position to win games. They did it defensively. They were in position to win. Their defense was, I thought, terrific. I thought that if you were scoring a bunch more, then stay with it and let them keep beating you with twos. The fact that we were struggling to score two, man, I thought we should have done something different. Pile it in more, make them make some outside shots. I thought we got beat by a team that made 8 threes. Am I right? Was it 8? Did they make 8 shots, 8 threes in the game?
We made eight and they
made ten. Right. So they made 10. Okay. Still, that's not a lot of threes.
No, vice versa. We made 10, they made eight.
That's what I thought. They made eight threes and three were lucky as hell. Not lucky they banked in, just lucky to get them off. So, and we lost. That tells you something.
At home, I think NBA fans, okay, there are playing time reasons for this too, but Lillard, Durant, Booker, and Middleton combined to make eight field goals. Like,
right. Well, Middleton didn't play, so take him out. Middleton barely played.
He barely, yeah.
So Lillard, so 3 for 10, Durant. I know you got it. I know it's a quiz, but you have the box score right there.
Okay, Durant, 4-12.
Okay. That's not a ton of shots, I get that. But France is trying to take those guys away some too, right? And who was the third one, Booker?
Booker, 1 of 6. And
yeah, Booker, to me, Booker never should have got. I wouldn't have played any of the three guys, except for shorter guys. Booker looked way out of his element in this game. I bet he'll be better too. Yeah, I don't blame. I'm happy to blame Cooks when I see it. And I do blame some of the defensive mistakes. I think we're arrogant and not adjusting more quickly. Like I told you, Ty Lue had been a great coach for this team. Great fucking coach. He needs to be on. Maybe he doesn't want to do it, which I understand. But we need quick thinking guys that are very fast moving. If one game ends, this is pool play. So it's not like, but then it's one and done. I like Ty Lue in one and done. In fact, tell me if I'm wrong, until he lost this last game, of course, the Clippers lost in game six, he had been like 12-0 in knockout games. Pretty fucking amazing. That's right. That's pretty damn amazing. That guy that does thing on that really great. So yeah. I like Ty Lue. I'd rather have a college coach, but if you can do a pro guy, I mean, I just convinced myself I'd pick Ty Lue.
Well done. Here's my last question on this team thing is, if you just, I mentioned the Hawks, but if you took a team that like played well in the playoffs and has a lot of American players and just sent them instead of this team, would they be better?
Yeah, we talked about this on the call, and you would have to pick a team that didn't have so many international players because they would lose Gallinari, Bogdanovich, and Capella right off the top. So Trae Young and Herter, no, that wouldn't be good enough. They only have two starters. But I think it's a great point. And I think going back to the construct of the team, I like the idea of piecing together people that have played together before because they have such little time to prepare together. This year more than ever. Remember, the European season ended way before ours.
Yeah.
They've been done since June. So, or May in some cases. So, I mean, the EuroLeague Final Four, I think, was early June. So I think we should think about that. It does come at a cost. Wear and tear is a factor. I mean, imagine if we had sent the Milwaukee Bucks over and Giannis
you wouldn't send the Milwaukee Bucks.
Right, but if you did, right. Okay, so pick a team. I mean, you can't just send an average team. You got to pick a pretty good team. But now, and I know you're just talking about in theory, not in practice, now there's more risk for injury. I really think these guys, I mean, the training camp since September. I don't know what these guys are doing. These Bucks players, what a mistake, I think, for Middleton. I mean, I get the...
So, wait, we're changing topic. Hold on, but like you're a basketball coach. Would the Knicks or whatever, like, except that there would be a team that would have foreign players filled in.
All USA players, yeah.
A team that lost in the first round of the playoffs and was pretty good, right? But you're going to fill in the spots with, you know, put your Bam Adebayos here and your whoever you want. Would that team be better than this team?
Without question.
Yeah.
Like, without question. As long as you have a team that's got a real special talent, which you need to have. Otherwise, you're like every other team. None of those teams have Yanni. Giannis isn't playing this year. They're just the language and terminology. Damian had a turnover yesterday. He was early in the game. First turn of the game, he's driving left. Zach LaVine's man is helping, and Zach goes to screen him. And I don't know why Lillard threw it to where he should have gone, which was the corner. Just had to throw it out of bounds. Like, right. I don't think that mistake happens to a team that practices all year long.
Right.
I don't know what Zach was thinking, but they'll learn from it. I think they'll get better from it from there. I mean, Team USA shot poorly. They were wide open, including in the last minute of the game, but all game long, we got good shots, not great shots. I mean, Durant forced a couple of shots, but it's Durant. Like, when do we ever care when Durant's taking contested shots before? He took some really bad ones. He just missed them. I just think we'll be sharper. We'll see. They're probably going to get a pool play. The first playoff game, the first, like, one-and-done kind of game. Like, then we'll see if Team USA is kind of rallying the troops or, like, why did we come here? Like, what are we doing? There's no fans. There's no atmosphere. They can't go out in the town, I don't think, which is a big part of the Olympics, is to experience the other events. And we all know Kobe was all over the place, and he wasn't alone. This is common, right? Stockton's famous for he could have gone in 92. Anyone in Barcelona, no one knew who he was. He filmed it, right? There's all this footage of him and his family. No one knew he was John Stockton. What a thrill that would be. They can't do that. I think the only thing they can do is their own events. Like, I know it's swimming. Swimming's been the most exciting thing to watch so far because all the other swimmers are in the arena. At least there's a bunch of people cheering, right? Of course, they're all filming it and studying it, whatever. It's not quite the same.
You should see our texting about, like, when are these games? Like, so the next game is against Iran, 12:40 a.m. Eastern, Wednesday morning early. So really, that's tomorrow, Tuesday night. When it will be on your TV, though, is a little tricky.
It's on. I paid for, I'm not even going to build true, $5 for Peacock TV.
There you go.
But I can't, unfortunately, I'm working players out at 7 in the morning right now.
There you go.
So I'm not going to be catching the 12:40 game, but I'll tape it and I'll watch it when I get back from my workout. And I don't care if I know the score or not. But I have it on Synergy too, but I like hearing the commentators. You get some behind the scenes stuff, some of those things, you know.
Then they play the Czech Republic and they probably need to win both of those games. Or it could come to points if three teams end up 1-2. They're still the favorites in Vegas to win gold. Australia and Spain are next, and then France. So we didn't lose to, like, the very best team, but as you point out, we lost to the biggest team. Okay. There you go.
David, I'm going to cancel Peacock after the Olympics too. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I have enough subscriptions. I would probably rank it that way too. I think Australia and Spain are better. I think Australia is very, very good. They really do play. They play together beautifully. They have Patty Mills, Joe Ingles. Those are two very good international players and NBA players too. So Team USA should still win. When you get to pool play, when you get out of pool play, it's all 0-0. Right? Doesn't matter what happened in game one. So, but anyway, it's gonna be hard. Like, these games are gonna be competitive. It's not like we're sending our top seven players. We're not. We're sending one of our top. Think of our top 10. How many of our top 10 players in the league are playing right now? One, Kevin Durant,
Luka.
Yeah, but he's on the other team.
Yeah, but you said how many are playing right now, so.
Right, he is top 10. He is an incredible player, and we'll be talking about Luka on Friday when we start talking about the draft. So we can do it with him now if you want to, because people are comparing the number one pick this year to him.
I think we honestly, and I'm thinking about it, I think we should send the Pelicans. Nike's okay with that, and they're not going to be tired.
So Lonzo, Bledsoe, Zion, Ingram, and Josh Hart. That team may not win the whole thing.
But I mean, if the Hawks or Knicks are better than Team USA, then this is close. This is close.
Yeah, I think. They're only better because they just know each other so well. Who coaches the Pelicans in this fictitious world you've created?
They just announced their coach Willie Green, right? Like,
yeah. I hope I'm rooting for Willie.
Yeah, but maybe they don't make a coaching change if they're on their way to the Olympics.
I think Zion's going to be on these teams going forward. You just got to play him with shooting centers or play him at center.
Anthony Towns.
I don't know if he's American. For the Islands, right?
Oh, that's true. Okay. But I do think, I guess I'm asking the question about this fictitious thing I'm creating, right? Because I'm asking about the fucking structure, which sucks. We're losing because Nike pulling the strings in the back room is a stupid system, right? They're playing all their warm-up. Their camp is at the Michelob Ultra Arena at Mandalay Bay, right? Like,
yeah.
Nobody thinks that's where you go to build the best teamwork on planet Earth. That's where you go for what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. You're going there because some private equity douchebag who's close to the commissioner has a big investment in Mandalay Bay, right? Like, that's why this is happening. If there's a better structure, maybe it's just an existing NBA team. Flawed though that.
So I think there's a better way to do it, which is, and a fairer way, which is pick a date. Let's say round one, probably is the fairest thing to say round one, because obviously this year is different. Normally the Olympics are early July. Any old athletes who lose prior to round two in the playoffs are eligible. And you bring them in. We're now talking about May 1st. May 1st-ish, right? So come to wherever you're training at. And I know why they're doing Vegas, so do you. So you got 2 full months. So basically it's a 2-month commitment where your family can come in. You can go home on certain weekends. These guys are used to, NBA players are very used to flying home on weekends, right? You can go home on weekends if you want to. You can bring your family in, but we're going to go 2 months together. And we want it to be let's call it a 2-year commitment where it's Olympics and World Championship, because it's every 2 years. So it's that, or maybe even three, it's that cycle. And that way you're not taking any players who make it in the round two and beyond, who are a little more fatigued and more chance for injury and less time bonding. Because I think you're right. You want more time together, not less. And that's about what these international teams do. The difference in national teams is, with the exception of the NBA players, they have international breaks all the time. So if you really want to do it to level the playing field, we would do the same thing. At least I think I could be wrong, it could be twice, but I think it's 3 times during the season. They have international breaks from all the leagues in the world except for the NBA, except for the USA leagues, where they leave their teams in Spain, France, Germany, Italy, and they go play for their national team in some event, and they practice with their national team. We don't do that. So I guarantee you, I might be old and dead at that point, you too. But Henry, that's going to happen. When the playing field gets so level that Team USA with our best players doesn't always win or doesn't even win half the time, we will start doing the same things. We will have our national team who get together 2 or 3 weeks during the course of the season of their leagues, and they practice, and they'll get together the entire offseason. And then we'll see what happens, but that'll end up happening, I think.
If basketball takes the driver's seat away from money, yeah, right? Like, something sort of like what you described was the exact process where Greg Popovich didn't make it because of politics, right? Like, so to me, like, they're going to come, like, you want your players to stay on a yacht offshore? It costs a fortune, right? Everyone's going to fly on a private jet. It costs a fortune. Nike's paying for that. Adidas is paying for that.
Yeah.
Farmers paying for that. And what do they want? Like, well, they don't want they don't want 12 Keldon Johnsons out there. You know what I mean? So I think we have, like, there are meetings where the force of the decision-making is not that much about what wins, right? I think that's the problem we have to solve. And, like, the schedule is huge in that. The 82-game schedule ruins a lot in basketball, including this, right? But until someone can be in that meeting and say, shut up, Nike. You know what I mean? Like, then nothing's going to change, really.
I agree with you. I completely agree. I don't think that'll ever happen that way. They want their top superstars. And if they play in the finals, so be it.
Okay, so this is one of my favorite times of year. I don't watch college basketball. I don't know how people do it. It's amazing. You, David, go deep this time of year. You go way down the rabbit hole on prospects for the draft, which is on Thursday. And then you call me. And sometimes you get this little tone of voice where, like, you're in love with somebody. You've seen something that makes you love somebody. You're going to write more about this, and we'll publish it later this week. But just tell us a little bit now. Like, what are some things you have seen on video vis-a-vis the draft that have you excited?
So the guy that most excites me, except for from Scotty Barnes, which I'll mention later, is Evan Mobley. Yeah. I went into this with zero notions of anything. Like, LaMelo Ball last year had the entire history of the Ball family and his high school career where he took half-court shots. I didn't know anything about any of these guys, basically. I mean, I knew their names and I'd read some reports. Mobley is 7 feet tall, 7'3½ wingspan. He basically plays like a right-handed Chris Bosh at that age, okay, who I watched play when he was at Georgia Tech. So what that means is super quick, super fast, super agile, really bouncy, right? Very skilled, more skilled than Bosh at that age. And I don't know why he's not going number one. I don't know why. I know he wasn't rated as high as Cade Cunningham in high school, but I don't know why that matters. Why are we letting high school scouting service decide who the better pro prospect is? I know I watch a lot of NBA games, as you do. And the idea of having a super athletic, long, fast, hungry dude on defense, guarding the entire landscape of this court that we have, seems pretty appetizing to me. because he can do that. He can really move, and he's skilled. And because he can handle the ball and play with it offensively, I think it actually enables him to guard smaller guys better defensively, as I've said to you for years. I think that's a big advantage. In his mind, he's been doing this a long time. He's projected to go top three. Houston has the number two pick, and I think they're feeling if they don't trade it, they're not going to take him because they already have Christian Wood. I don't know what that means, but I just know that's what I'm hearing. So that would mean he would drop to number three if that isn't traded. But he's my favorite guy. He and Scottie Barnes, my two favorite players. They both have 7-foot-plus wingspan. They both love to defend. Mobley is an ambidextrous shot blocker, which you don't always see. For old people like me, you remember the Far Side? And you remember there's dudes picking sides for pickup basketball. Oh, yeah. And one guy has the gigantic hand, like the hand the size of his body, and they're like, we'll take him first. Like that's just one hand, not two. I promise you, he was just using one hand to block shots in theory. But that's how most guys are. Left-handed shooters tend to be left-handed shot blockers. This guy's an ambidextrous shot blocker. That's, you just don't see that a ton. So I like him.
What we'll note is Chris Bosh on, so poor Chris Bosh. People make so much fun of him when he played next to LeBron and Dwayne, like didn't score like they did. But during that period, he was the best pick and roll defender in the league in the advanced stats, which is a thing that occurs all the time, right? If you have that guy on your team, if Evan Mobley can snuff out the ball handler in the pick and roll and whatever, like again and again, and make good choices and be super mobile and get to the rim and block shots with both hands. Like this is a skill that applies 50 times a game.
Way more. Yeah.
That's what gets you really good plus minus numbers is you're really good at things that happen again and again and again and again, right?
And he can jump to 13 feet so he can roll. Yeah. His shot looks nice. He's not a good 3-point shooter yet. I don't think he's taking any. His mid-range looks good. I don't think he's a great scorer now. Who cares? Neither was Anthony Davis. I remind people all the time, Anthony Davis made one field goal the year he won the championship at Kentucky. He made one shot in the game. He made some free throws, but he made one shot, okay? Now, he's a monster. People say, people write that Mobley's frame may not be able to hold a lot of weight because he's slender. Did you see Anthony Davis in college? Did you see Giannis when he came in the NBA? Come on now. I'm not an expert in that. I have experience. I know that Anthony Davis now looks like he was built in a lab. Giannis Antetokounmpo looks like he was built in a lab on another planet, right? I don't know that Mobley can't look like that. I don't know. I just know that he's got everything else you'd want. Cade Cunningham is going to go number one, most people think. He looks like a very high floor player, meaning he's going to start. Like, I think he's a better version of Lonzo Ball. And I like Lonzo. Lonzo's about to get paid a bunch of money. I think Cade is better now than Lonzo was then. And I think Cade has a real shot to be better than Lonzo is now, and Lonzo is now a very good 3-point shooter. He's been an excellent defensive player in his career. He's a brilliant and willing passer. And I think Lonzo is a good culture guy. Like, people like playing with him. I think Cade checks all those same boxes at 6'8". I really like what he's going to do. But to answer Devin's question, I was going to get to it. Fuck no, is he Luka Doncic? No. So Cade Cunningham is a freshman at Oklahoma State. They had a nice year in the Big 12, best conference probably in the league, top to bottom. I think they finished as a fifth seed in the Big 12. They did make it to the Big 12 championship game in the tournament, which means they won a couple games. And then they had lost to Texas, who was okay. And then they went to the NCAA tournament, and I think they lost round one. Like, they keep and win an NCAA tournament game. Luka, at the same age, let's be clear here, played with professionals who would destroy the Big 12 in the ACB League in Spain. So he won that championship. He was the MVP of that. They didn't do an MVP in the last game. They did. He was MVP of the league for the season. I don't think Cade Cunningham was the National Player of the Year this year in college. He was also the newcomer of the year in that league. In the EuroLeague, he was the champion of the EuroLeague, which also destroys any Big 12 team. He was the MVP of the Final Four and the champion. So to say that there's another Luka 2 years later, no. No, Luka is genius at winning games without being a great athlete. So yes, Kate Cunningham shares that trait with Luka. Kate Cunningham's a very good athlete. He is not one of these high flyers. He is not. He's not super fast. He's not super quick. He's a very good player. I think his ceiling is lower and his floor is very high. He's a very safe pick. I would not take him number one in this particular draft, but I understand he's a franchise level point guard. I don't know that he's a better point guard in his career than Lonzo or Jrue Holiday. I don't know that. I know this. We're not great at always projecting the superstars, but we're normally pretty good at it. So Mobley is the guy that hit me the most. A name you're going to hear a lot, two names, John Kuminga and Jalen Green, who played in the G League this year. Mm-hmm. Henry, I will tell you, I would rather watch paint dry than watch that G League team play. I watched it live.
Yeah.
And I was not impressed then. It was garbage. Like, Brian Shaw ran the team. I'm not blaming him because I have no idea if they want to listen to him or not. It wasn't even very many games. It was, you know, 8 games, whatever it was. It's not maybe 10 games. I don't know. I don't know how many games they played. It wasn't a full season. It was garbage basketball times 10. Just terrible. Kuminga started great, ended badly. And he's a 6'8", really athletic. Looks the part, but easily connect. Looks like Jaylen Brown, but may end up being nowhere close to being Jaylen Brown. It's just hard to guess. Jalen Green is exciting. Jalen Green, of all the tape I watched, had the single most exciting play. He was going full speed downhill towards the rim. He spun and scored. And most people would have fallen down for 100 yards at the speed he was going. He was able to race full speed. Imagine Carl Lewis or someone running fast as hell and then doing a 360 and keep running. That's what he did and scored. Like, no one can do that. So pretty amazing athletic talent, but no idea what he's doing. He's Anthony Edwards all over again. Amazing talent, absolutely might be a 25-point-per-game scorer. Not at all convinced he gets that around two. That's a lot of Zach Levine-ish guys that are just incredible scorers. I don't know if they can win games. How would you know the G League, their G League showcase team ran a bunch of garbage? It's a lot of swing and miss for me in evaluating those guys. But they're exciting for sure. And you know me, I love Scotty Barnes. I would take him one or two with Evan Mobley. He's the most like Giannis. I'm writing about all these players this week. We'll publish it, I think, Thursday morning before the draft. Barnes, to me, is the most like Giannis in that he's 6'9", 7'3", wingspan, 39.5-inch vertical leap. He ain't built like Giannis now, but he's 19 years old. They had COVID. All these players were affected by the COVID protocols, so they're all going to get much better. But this guy really wants to compete. I thought Mobley competed really hard, too. Averaged like huge number of block shots a game. They're my two favorite guys, Henry.
What about Jalen Suggs?
I like him like Kyle Lowry, Jrue Holiday. Like, I you know, he's big and strong, powerful guy. Can't really shoot, but neither could Lowry. Neither could really Holiday. Super competitive, high-level defender, high-level character guy, can really run your team, but just doesn't have the upside. Again, I mean, how many little guys are dominating the game? And winning, right? Because it comes at a cost defensively. He's a little different. He's not a great scorer, but a high-level defender. He's not Damian Lillard. He really defends. I like him again, like Jrue Holiday, Kyle Lowry, longtime starter, can't miss guy, but also he can't be Giannis. He's not going to be the league MVP, I don't think, anyway.
Yeah, I remember you wrote about him a little bit as in the Mike Conley analysis, right, where he's yeah. – can get the ball quickly to the second box for, I guess.
He's going to be able to score and those kinds of things. It's really, there's a lot of guys like Conley. There's a lot of little guys that can really shoot and score. To go number one seems odd to me. Yeah, in our rundown, I'm going to list a number of guys. There's a kid from Connecticut, Book Nine, I think it's pronounced, can really score. There's a few that are very good scorers, but undersized and going to be tough to guard. They're going to have a tough time guarding the guys we have in the league. So they'll be high-level scorers, six-man-of-the-year kind of guys. But to be Giannis, I mean, that's what we're trying to be, right? You're drafting to find the next Giannis, the next Luka. I don't see it in Cade and some of those little guys. I see it potentially in Mobley and Barnes.
Yeah. Okay. Good stuff. All right, so Team USA going to win gold?
I mean, I would, if I was a betting man, I'd bet on them. Yeah, I'm not convinced they can't do it. It's just hard.
Yeah.
These games are tough.
Judy's bugging me about the time, but it literally says 11:59 on her note. She's pretty good about the time.
She's from the future.
She's from the future. All right. Thank you very much, David. Oh, no, Gerard, we miss him. He's on vacation. He'll be back. Thank you, Friday. Thank you, Dave. We'll talk to you guys soon.